I'm taking a pause from Matthew because I wanted to kind of do a sermon slash state of the church address after last week's annual meeting, because I think it's important for all of us to hear it, whether you're a member or not, or if you're a member that wasn't able to make it or chose not to come for whatever reason. I want to get us all kind of on the same page, and so today's going to be a little bit different because I'm going to load you guys with a lot of stuff because I need help, because this is the stuff that loads my mind, loads my heart, and we'll get to that. But so it's a little selfish, but I think we all need to be on the same page with where your pastor's thinking and what burdens his heart. But before we get there, we need to read Scripture and conform our hearts and minds to what he says. And so I want us to start in verse 23 of 1 Corinthians chapter 10. All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. Let no one seek his own good, but the good of his neighbor. Eat whatever is sold in the meat market without raising any question on the ground of conscience. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. If one of the unbelievers invites you to dinner and you are disposed to go, eat whatever is set before you without raising question on the ground of conscience. But if someone says to you, this has been offered in sacrifice, then do not eat it for the sake of the one who informed you and for the sake of conscience. I do not mean your conscience, but his. For why should my liberty be determined by someone else's conscience? If I partake with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of that for which I give thanks? So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense to Jews or Greeks or to the church of God, just as I try to please everyone in everything I do, not seeking my own advantage, but that of many, that they may be saved. I want us to key in to 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. This verse is a climax in Paul's arguing against people saying you shouldn't or should eat food sacrificed to idols. And one of the things he's doing here is saying food or drink does not define a Christian. What you do or don't do, it does not define Christians. So oftentimes, back in the day, you're not a Christian if you get a tattoo. You're not a Christian if you listen to rap music. Stuff like that is done away with these verses. That actions are what define who a Christian is and what they do and don't do. Yes, there are some, actually many things that Christians should not do because they tear God's heart apart. They are sinful. But is that what defines us? No. But Christ is who defines us. And he's saying what you decide to eat or even drink for that matter is an issue of conscience rather than an issue of outright sinfulness. So at the end of the discussion, he says, whatever your conscience, and make sure it's a biblically informed conscience, that it's a conscience that is drenched in God's Spirit and His Word, whatever that Spirit guides you to do, do it all to the glory of God. You know, there's a quote by Martin Luther, if you're going to sin, sin boldly. And we're like, really? All right, let's get to it. But the context was he was responding to a letter written by one of his, let's just call him a disciple, one of the guys he was teaching. And the guy was saying, you know, they're calling what I'm doing and preaching the gospel sinful. You know, the Catholic Church, the Pope is saying what we're doing and talking about justification by faith, not works, is sinful. Martin, what do I do? And Martin Luther basically is saying, well, if that is sin, to free people from the bondage of sin, Satan, and guilt, and by talking about justification by faith, then sin boldly, my friend, because it's the right thing to do. And so, church, I've been laboring in thought and prayer about where we are as a church and where we are going, and Oftentimes my mind and my thoughts are in a jumble. There are some things that we could be doing that we are not doing and that we should be doing. There are some things that we are doing and we just need to do them better and have more involvement. And there may even be some things that we are doing and need to stop doing for various reasons. There are some things that we are doing and we just need more hands and feet. So when we ask the question of why are we doing something, it can get uncomfortable and complicated. I mean, churches in communities are split over what churches should be doing and what philosophy we live under of what we find doing with our time. I cannot sit here and tell each of you why you do or do what you do or what motivations compel you. That's a heart issue between you and God. I mean, if you want to come into my office and we can wrestle and try to peel back the layers of our hearts, we can. But I'm going to leave that with you to wrestle with God. I can't read your minds. I can't read your hearts. And you can't read mine and be thankful for that. But I can tell you what our motivation and reasoning should be as a church at large for whatever we do. As a church, our main motivation needs to and always will be, and sometimes we can get off course, but we need course correction sometime, and that is to glorify God. It's easy to say, though, and because of our wandering hearts, difficult to wrestle with. And so many of us need to wrestle with this question because we may assume we are doing something for the glory of God, but there's actually something else underneath motivating us. I actually just watched an interview between a pastor that I am filled by, and he was talking about this exact issue of doing things to the glory of God, and he has to wrestle with anybody that has any kind of public platform of saying we're doing it for the glory of God, but we're really doing it for personal praise or applause, even using the Bible to do it. And that's a danger. How many likes can I get on Facebook? How many well done's, Pastor? Pats on the back. This is something with which we all must wrestle. Do I do or desire things in the ministry of the church because of tradition? Well, we've always done it that way, and we need to keep doing it that way. And tradition isn't always bad, but tradition needs to have reason and purpose from Scripture. Do we want or want to see things because of personal preference? Because we're comfortable with it? Personal standards, which is similar to personal preference. Or are we doing it because it makes the people outside happy and makes us relatable, it makes us enticing? We need to ask the same questions about why we don't do things. Am I not attending? Am I not serving? Or am I not participating because it's not traditional? Because it's not my personal preference? Because it makes me uncomfortable? Because it doesn't meet some sort of standard that I've set? Or because someone hurt my feelings once with an off comment? Or I don't want people to see me too involved in the church because then they'll think I'm one of those religious nuts. Or is it worry, doubt, anger? There are a whole host of deeper issues that God wants to root out in our lives so that we can do things to the glory and for the glory of God. And so, church, as we move forward from paying off the Family Life Center mortgage, there are many directions we can go and many visions that we can have, and none of them are necessarily worse than the other one or better than the other one. There are visions of fixing things, upgrading things, giving money to different people or places, starting new ministries, and these are all good things, but we need to be patient and think through whatever we do. And that's not to say that we spend all of our time thinking. We need to actually get up and do something. Some of us need to hear that. Not to be mean, but that's something I need to, let's be honest, church. If I could, I would spend the good majority of the day in bed. And so I need to tell myself, get your bum out and get to the gym. Can you tell? Church, if we don't have the energy or commitment to or drive to do what we are already doing, then what makes us think we are ready or willing to do something new? So with that being said, I want to share with you my heart about some things that came up in our annual meeting. Because at the time, I didn't want to shoot from the hip and say something inaccurately, which I contend to do. My plan is not to offend, but to bring us all on the same page so that you know what your pastor is thinking. I don't often cast vision because I'm not sure oftentimes how to accomplish the vision that I have. And I'm also not sure how to get people on board or even get people to contribute, in particular those who have not been contributing or have phased themselves out of ministry. Well, those are my issues that I wrestle with God in prayer and in my office as I stare at wilting plants because I'm not motivated enough to get up and get water. So I'm there with you. So the first thing we need to tackle is this issue of property issues right off the bat. Let's just talk. Our church is in need of some facelifts, floor lifts, carpet lifts, stair lifts. Carpets need changing, walls need painting, technology needs improving, doors need to be repaired and or replaced, kitchens and bathrooms need some work, stairs need to be replaced, leaks need to be fixed, and handicapped individuals need service. But with all of these come price tags, which are quite hefty, and discussion needs to be had. Especially when we talk about, and I went on about this a little bit in my address when I was talking about the pastor's report about an elevator and handicap accessibility. When we first talked about this 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was even closer to 4 years ago, we were pretty much settled on an elevator. I'm not convinced any longer that an elevator is what we need or what would be best stewardship of the finances of our church. An elevator would mean major construction, probably the relocation and loss of rooms, as well as yearly costs of phone lines and inspections. And it's not as easy, well, just put it there because we don't really use that side of the building, or just put it there. There are structural integrity issues that you need to talk about. On top of that, we have to make sure that what we decide to do, we are giving access to all of our building, not just the sanctuary. So we welcome anyone that wants to help us think through this issue, but not because we are growing older, but because we want to glorify God as we love the less able. So if we just have, for example, right now we have access to the sanctuary. We don't have access for the handicapped for any bathrooms. And the best handicapped bathrooms we have are over here. How do we get there? Well, A, we have to all commit to not drawing attention if people have to come front and go to the bathroom, because it happens. We'd have to build a ramp on either side. They wouldn't qualify either. And they're the closest we have. But one thing I did say is, as long as we don't do any major renovations, we don't have to bring everything up to code, according to Officer Garth in Waterville. If we did a major renovation of the entire building worth over $80,000, then we would have to bring things up to code. But that's not what we're necessarily looking for. So there are lots of questions that need to be answered rather than just this or that. What kind of lift would be best? What kind of other construction would be necessary? And we also have to look at something interesting, which would still need to solve the handicap accessibility of this building, but we do have a building that is handicap accessible. And we just paid off a mortgage on it. And that's the FLC, the Family Life Center. However, we are even a ways off from that being a reality for even just morning worship. We would need teams willing to set up and tear down for each and every Sunday or other events. We would need to improve our sound equipment and even possibly building a permanent sound booth area out back that could protect, we could protect during sporting events even. These are not all easy things that will happen right away. Plus, many of us would have to do the hard work of not worshiping every Sunday in a traditional sanctuary. However, I will tell you, I will be honest to tell you that if we did do this Sunday, someday in the future, and I'm not saying that I'm pushing for this or that it's definitely a direction to go, but it would be of great benefit for the safety and security of our children if we were to worship over there and have our children's ministries over here. And so I want you to hang with me and not get all riled up as I share some of the stuff I'm about to share with you. If we were to worship in the Family Life Center, then we could dedicate this entire building to the safety of our children and have it locked and secured during worship. I know many of you have not liked the fact that we try keeping doors locked on Sunday morning and ask you to use the main entryway. And those of you who have keys have made it clear you're going to use those doorways anyway. I also know many of you don't like having to fill out paperwork for children or get children rather than children coming to you. But these are minimum and necessary safety measures. Children's safety issues are huge, and we want parents and families to feel their children are safe. So I want to ask you an uncomfortable question right now. Who is in the nursery right now at this very moment? And I'm not asking for a specific name that you know who's on the bulletin. But one, how do we know that it's just the nursery workers and our children in there? How would we know if someone entered into our building right this very minute and went straight down there to our children? I wouldn't have a clue. So church, ushers, everyone, we need to be thinking about this. Just because the offering is taken doesn't mean we are safe and off duty. We should have people circulating regularly to make sure this building is safe at all times. If we were to meet in the FLC, we could have this building locked with only the children workers having access and welcoming children into the nursery. Then when the kids head over, we could have one or two gentlemen do a sweep of the building to make sure there is no one is in there that shouldn't be and make sure the kids are safe. Did you know? 3 out of 4 adolescents who have been assaulted were victimized by someone they knew well. And not just by adults, but even by older children that weren't background checked. This is why we ask people not to hang out in the fellowship hall during Sunday school and to join a class or get involved during those times. That is why we don't want teens or people just milling around the building. It's not an issue of trust, but safety for everyone. And these are realities. I could send you article upon article upon article from the past 30, 40 years that it happens in churches. To keep our kids safe and well taught and cared for is a huge burden. We need more people that are willing to, one, take on the role of researching and seeing how we can improve our security as a church and for our children. We have a great policy, and maybe some updates need to happen, but a great policy that was written for children's protection. Two, we need help with children, both teaching and in crowd control. If you were to just see, we did a little tour of the baptistry because we were learning about baptism. We have a ton of kids and probably more on the way. You fruitful people, you. People willing, we also need 3, and this is a hard one, people willing to be trained in teaching and helping in all aspects. Have you ever thought about being a volunteer in the church and having to be trained for something? Often no, because that takes work, that takes time out of our already busy schedules. We need people willing to check in children and welcome our children and families. We need people willing to join the ushers and welcome table and welcome people, show them who we are and be alert for the whole service and maybe have a security team. maybe even with cool security shirts. And if you want a badge, I'm in. Because if you know anything about security, the first step is deterrent. Just know. If they see anything that says security, they're immediately going to say, all right, they're prepared. Show them who we are and be alert for the whole service. And there are many needs like this in our day and age. If you think things like this would never happen at a church, again, I don't say these things to be alarmist, and I'm not panicking. I'm honestly not concerned right now, and I think we're doing an okay job, but we can do better. We need to come to the reality and realize that the world is growing darker and bad things do happen even in churches. I don't believe God is glorified in just offering something. I believe He is glorified when we are all in and put all our effort fully into what we do. And for someone who can tend to struggle with sloth and procrastination, this is a battle I need to fight daily. And this has been more on my mind, not just because I'm a father of little ones now, but because we are clearly growing in our children's and future youth ministries, and we need help. This needs to be a primary area of focus for our church, and I mentioned in my annual report that I have a desire to hire an associate minister or director of families who would bring leadership and direction to our children, youth, and growing families. This issue did come up at the annual meeting, and it wasn't satisfactorily covered. Right now, we have a small budget for a youth director, and we may be able to get an intern to bite on something like that. But the best we can offer right now is a part-time salary, and I would love to offer more. So if any of you have access to some sort of housing we could offer, or even a decent part-time job, or close to full-time, that would even give flexibility or income to round out the corners, let me know. Otherwise, we should really be praying about how we can offer a full-time position in this area. And as I discuss this with the diaconate and the elders, we may even, if this is a direction they want to go, you know, maybe that's too premature. I'm willing to be open and submissive to what we feel the Lord is leading all of us, not just me. But maybe we put a committee together to see how to get this happening. Not committee. I hate committees. Team. I know that this is a hard discussion because we see how run down our buildings are and we have major projects to work towards, so I don't say that lightly. And I know I've raised a few things here and this feels a bit more like a status update and logistical speech, but I want us to pause. Why are all these issues important? And how does taking them seriously glorify God? They glorify God because they are either products or issues we are working at to be obedient to Jesus. How are we being obedient to Jesus? We are being obedient by taking these issues seriously so we can engage in discipleship. Discipleship is not a spectator sport. Discipleship is active and multifaceted. Discipleship involves sitting and learning. You are being discipled right now. This is a moment of discipleship. But we don't just sit and learn to then ignore, but we sit and learn so we can communicate to others. And so when you stand up after having sat through this and you turn to your fellow congregant and you talk and you ask, how are you doing? How can I pray for you? I hope you're doing that. That is a moment of, what do we call it? Discipleship. A disciple follows, learns, and grows, then goes out and uses what they have learned. And that's the job of the leadership of this church, is to provide times of equipping and times to use our equipping so that we can go out to and minister to the world. And as the ladies learned yesterday, one at a time, one-on-one. You don't have to have a whole room. Discipleship is the name of the game at Blessed Hope Church. Whatever we do, how does it get us or equip us to disciple or even be discipled? We fellowship and serve as a goal to discipleship, and this includes young and old and making sure we are doing it in a safe way. So, church, I have a question for you. Are you being discipled? And if you are you discipling? It could be a coworker, it could be a family member, it could be a neighbor, it could be your kids. It should be your kids. Let's just put that first and foremost. Parents, your number one priority of discipleship are your children. Number one, but it doesn't mean you can't have a number two. Are you engaged in not just chatting about sports, weather, or politics, but are you finding ways to engage in talking about Jesus? If you don't feel equipped to do these things, then I have to ask, have you been invested in the opportunities provided here at the church? Are you engaging in these types of conversations even with your fellow Christians? I often find it funny that Christians even have talking about Jesus with other Christians. Church, our ministry is not about money. And to be honest, I hate talking about it. I don't like mentioning it. Do we need more? Yes. We all need more, okay? But that's not the point. Ministry is not about buildings. They are helpful and open up opportunities for creativity and many other things, but our ministry is truly about discipleship and how we use these things for discipleship, how we use our money, how we use our resources, how we use our buildings for discipleship. And the goal of discipleship is getting one another in the world to know the true and living Jesus. It's not just to get to know us. We're just the vessel that gets them to know Jesus. And we do it poorly, but he has chosen in his sovereignty to use this dude to do it. Church, we can do this. We can solve our handicap problems. We can solve our children's safety holes. We can solve staffing issues. We can solve all of these things because God is good. He is all powerful. We serve him. You're not serving me. He is able. He is powerful. He can do it. But I need to ask you, what are you willing to do to get it done?